Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Please silence all cell phones. Today's Thursday, April 15th, 2021. I'm joined today by Senator Wilikowski, Senator Stedman, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman is be here momentarily. Senator Wilson is in another committee but is hustling up here. Senator Von Imhoff. I believe I went around the table and co-chair Stedman. Our moderator is Carson and Allison is our secretary. Good morning. Mr. Bailey is going to run the slide decks. Thank you for doing that for us, Mr. Bailey. Today's agenda, presentation on workforce development and career and technical education by the Departments of Labor, Education, and the University of Alaska. Joining us today will be Commissioner Dr. Tamika Ledbetter, Commissioner Dr. Michael Johnson, President Pat Pitney. They will be accompanied on teams by support staff, Mr. Brad Billings, CTE Administrator for Education, Deb Riddle, Department of Education Division of Operations, and Terry Cothran, UA Associate Vice President. Commissioner Ledbetter, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
All right, the floor is yours, and would you please start off? And I know that just for the, we have Dr. Johnson up second, and I know he has had a previous commitment for the last several months. I know you guys have coordinated, so let's roll through these slides, but we'll stop at each one and take a pause, and we'll look for the table for questions.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Co-Chair Bishop and Co-Chair Stedman and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, I am Dr. Tamika L. Ledbetter, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present to you on the longstanding partnership and work being done in career and technical education. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development works very closely with our educational partners, Department of Education and Early Development and the University of Alaska, to ensure that financial resources are maximized and that strategic decisions are made and where and how those resources are deployed. It is a pleasure for me to co-present today alongside of my colleagues, and the co-chair has already introduced all of them. The State Career and Technical Education Plan is a collaboration of our three entities and a blueprint for our work. Career and technical education is not a new topic of discussion amongst myself and my colleagues, but to the contrary, it's an ongoing conversation. It's a continual partnership and collaboration that we have forged to ensure the successful implementation and sustainability of career and technical education. And if I may, Mr. Co-Chair, challenge all of us in the room and on the teams for a moment to consider a different language and nomenclature as we think of and speak about career and technical education today. From our perspective, CTE is not just a shop class in a local middle or high school. CTE is not simply a program offered at a local college or a path that a student takes once someone has deemed him or her to not be what some would consider college material. But rather, CTE is a strategically coordinated effort by which we introduce students of all ages to career skills that are relevant, that lead to high growth, high demand jobs for now and for the future. And so as the lead statewide workforce development agency, the Department of Labor and Workforce Development is responsible for building and strengthening a skilled workforce. And much of that work is conducted by the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, which is the planning and coordinating entity for Alaska's workforce development system. And so Alaska's system is unique in that it is one of only three states in the country with one workforce investment board and therefore one lead agency coordinating the workforce needs. And so as we go through the slide presentation today, I will highlight the many state and federal training grant programs that originate within the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And at the conclusion of my presentation, we will continue with the Department of Education and the University of Alaska to discuss program highlights and how specifically state and federal financial resources are deployed for career and technical training. And so the goal today is to inform of the current work that's currently being done and also to discuss opportunities to ensure a skilled and qualified workforce. And so with that, if we could turn our attention to the slides.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I'm not able to see the slides as you are, but I will try to work with whoever is changing them. So in 2010, the Alaska Career and Technical Education Plan was drafted. It was a collaboration, as I mentioned before, between the three entities, education, labor, and the university. And we formed an advisory committee. There was a lot of opportunity for public input. And that annual advisory committee conducted work sessions to ensure that that plan was put in place. Later on in 2018, because this is ongoing work, there was a need to review the 2010 plan strategies and to re-energize the conversation around career and technical education, and also to provide advocacy tools and strategy guidance. And so as we were looking ahead, there was a call to action. We continued to promote career and technical education. We continued to leverage the existing workforce planning efforts. And then we also went on this campaign to communicate with our partners, to bring more people to the table, and to advocate for career and technical education investment. What we have now, I believe, is a career and technical education infrastructure that has been created because of the strong partnership that we have with education and with the university, and frankly, with our employer community and our private training providers. And we'll speak to some of that. If we look at the slide dealing with the state-funded training programs, it's important to note that there is quite a bit of opportunity through our funding streams to assist with particular training efforts. And so one of those state-funded training programs is STEP, the State Training and Employment Program. STEP is funded by a percentage of the employee contribution to the Unemployment Insurance Training Fund. Those funds are applied, they are put out for a competitive process. We have multiple entities to apply for that funding stream. And in FY 2021, there were 35 STEP grantees awarded over $5.5 million in totality. We also have the Alaska Construction Academies, which are very popular across the state. Those construction academies are funded by general fund dollars, and those funds, of course, are determined by the legislature. In FY 2021, there were 8 construction academies, and they received a total award of over $1.7 million. We can continue on with looking at TVEP. Many of the members of this committee, you're very familiar with that. TVEP is a percentage awarded to recipients that are determined by the legislature in statute. In FY 2021, there were 7 TVEP recipients with a total award of over $4.3 million. Are there any questions so far, Mr. Co-Chair?
Commissioner, could you just speak to individual training accounts just to for a moment? It's not bulleted there. I know where it's embedded, but could you just speak about that?
Absolutely, I may, Mr. Co-Chair. Individual training accounts essentially are, it's a source of funding that is delivered through our local job centers for participants and support services. There are, and you'll see in a future slide, there are 12 job centers across the state. If an individual is interested in training that leads to employment, we are able to support that training effort by the individual training accounts, and those funds can be disseminated to whatever training provider the individual chooses. ITAs are used to provide services to multiple individuals, particularly dislocated workers, people who are upskilling, reskilling, or even employed individuals who just need a little extra credential to add to their skill set. And so ITAs can be used for multiple things: classroom training, work-based learning, on-the-job training, customized training opportunities, registered apprenticeship, incumbent worker training, and transitional jobs. Is there anything in particular, sir, you would like me to address?
No, that's fine. That's perfect. So just showing the committee, here's another vehicle at the department for an individual to walk in off the street and do just what you said. You've got your 15 regional training centers around the state, and we're going to see that in a little bit. So lots of resources.
Lots of resources. So for the slide dealing with federally funded training programs, again, this is another wonderful opportunity for individuals to seek training and funding for training. Particularly, we work under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, WIOA. Title 1B includes not only youth, WIOA youth, but also adult and dislocated worker. But particularly for the youth funding, providers receive funding through also a competitive grant process. Right now, we have 13 WIOA youth providers, and there is over $3.7 million awarded for that effort. There is funding through the National Emergency Dislocated Worker Program. This is an opportunity for if there's ever an event that causes a disruption in the workforce, something like the earthquake of 2018, these funds are used in that effort. There are also statewide project programs where there's some discretionary funding used for, particularly we've got Alaska Works Partnership, Helmets to Hard Hats, the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, which really targets youth housing and job assistance. And so there, that's just another avenue for funding that's available through the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I would be remiss, we're going to the next slide, if we did not speak of apprenticeship. There are some out there that would make you believe that apprenticeship is a new discussion, but the department has been involved in apprenticeship for a very long time. We have right now the American Apprenticeship Initiative, AAI. Those grant funds are used to expand healthcare-sponsored apprenticeships and pre-apprenticeships. The state apprenticeship expansion, those funds are used to exactly what it says, expand statewide apprenticeship, create strategies to increase the state's capacity to handle apprenticeships. And then also apprenticeship state expansion, and the purpose of that grant is to integrate construction registered apprenticeships into the statewide workforce development system. And so we're doing a lot of work in the area of apprenticeship. Our state has been highlighted several times for the way we have pretty much embedded the apprenticeship model into our day-to-day work activity. Doctor, next slide. Oh, I'm sorry.
Commissioner?
Yes?
I want to, Mr. Bailey, would you back up to slide 6 for one? I just wanted you to, if you would, under the Alaska Works Partnership, Helmets to Hard Hats, could you just, being a veteran, and thank you for your service, and could you go back and just highlight that a little bit? Because there's several of us here that represent several military bases and how that helmet to hard hat works just a little bit?
Absolutely, sir. The Alaska Helmets to Hard Hats project supports training and career guidance and apprenticeship education for veterans, transitioning soldiers, guardsmen, reserves, and spouses. Participants will attend a construction career exploration and basic skills courses for a variety of construction trades and craft occupations. I am particularly invested in the work that we do in serving our veterans. I am a veteran, and I believe that this is a wonderful way to capture those skills and to bring people into the Alaska workforce by meeting the needs of our veterans. And Helmets to Hard Hats has been one of those programs that has served us well in meeting the needs of our veterans. Anything else in particular, sir, concerning Helmets to Hard Hats?
No, just one other, just that to the committee, that those Helmets to Hard Hats also have a direct entry into these apprenticeship programs you just spoke about as well. So thank you. Please continue.
Yes, sir. So if we look at the slide that shows the Alaska Job Center Network, we chose to add the map so that you can see where those 12 job centers are located. A lot of work is done out of the job center. Many people know about the Department of Labor and Workforce Development because they enter our services through a local job center. And so at the job center, we are serving everyone. We have services that are for veterans, for individuals who are adult basic ed deficient, for individuals who are returning citizens having spent time in some sort of incarceration. We meet the needs of individuals who are over 55, those who are ESL, dislocated workers, displaced homemakers, individuals who just don't really know what they want to do, young people who are just starting out. Our services touch everyone, and most of those services will initially be accessed through your local job center. Next slide.
One question.
Sorry?
One, page 8. So over the last 8 years in our belt tightening, we have used to have two other job centers, one in Utqiagvik and one in Kotzebue. And I just would ask that if you could take a hard look at this CARES Act, American Recovery Act funding that's coming through, if you can find a way to maybe stand those two back up. We're going to have a slug of work at us here over the next 8 years, tentatively coming, and might be a good chance to go back in there and get those partnerships reestablished with Bering Straits and ASRC.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your point has been noted.
Thank you.
If we will continue to the next slide, we are looking at our regional training centers across the state. Essentially, these are the recipients of TVEP funding. And if you will see, there are 10 of those regional training centers. And I also want to point out that UA, University of Alaska, also has workforce programs across the state. Next slide. So I just wanted to give a visual of what the training grants administered through the AWIB, how they are portioned out. And if you can see, there's quite a bit that goes to STEP and then TVEP, and then the rest of those funding streams. This is not an all-inclusive list, but it just gives you a visual of how the department is supporting multiple programs and delivering multiple services and the funding streams under those services. Next slide. The Alaska Vocational Technical Education Center, AVTEC, It's always a joy for me to promote AvTech. Many do not know that AvTech is a division of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. AvTech provides post-secondary career and technical education and has been doing so since 1969. It is employer-driven. It is relevant in terms of the training that is being delivered. It's specific to Alaska jobs. The five-year average, the stats show an over 90% student completion rate with also a 90% placement and employment. Those who are graduating from AvTech and completing those programs are indeed going to work. And we know that any career and technical education program worth its salt will end in employment. And one other bragging note, AvTech has been ranked in the top 1% by Georgetown University to be one of the best for return on investment. Any questions about AvTech?
Senator Von Imhoff.
Hey, well done on that last bullet point. I've heard nothing but good things about AvTech, and this is a tremendous program. Very looking much forward to the next slide when you talk about the different funding, particularly in the CARES Act. So please do a deep dive in that next slide, by the way. Tell us what all those acronyms are. And because this is where, if I see where the CARES Act is going, and I'm just giving a little precursor. If this program is so successful, let's expand it and scale it up to the degree that we can with this CARES Act. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair. This is a wonderful opportunity to, yes, discuss how the funds are sourced and what these acronyms mean. And so for this slide, looking at AvTech funding, the current sources of funding, we have a chunk is federally funded, and then we have undesignated general funds that we receive. Designated funds, there is a slice for TVEP, and then individual accounts, of course, that would be tuition. And Senator, through the chair, if you don't mind, can we follow up with you specifically about a deep dive for the funding and how it is allocated? Because I want to be sure that we can speak to this with specificity, considering our budgetary situation.
We'll send you the written question from the senator, and we'll, yes, that'd be fine.
Thank you so much. And so I will say, as I prepare to transition to Commissioner Johnson, that, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to present about the work that's being done with career and technical education and how it has been strengthened over the years. I've been with this department for over 14 years, and I can tell you with credibility and certainty that having been a case manager on the front line, a job center manager, a regional manager, and now the sitting commissioner, the Department of Labor has always risen to the occasion of dealing with economic cycles. I can assure you that the infrastructure for career and technical education, and frankly, the entire workforce development plan, is in place to meet the demands of this current challenge of growing and equipping our own workforce through CTE. And we are invested in getting Alaskans back to work. And so if you can just visualize one more time the 12 job centers across the state, add to that the 10 regional training centers, add to that the multiple private training providers who are doing excellent work across the state, we are well positioned for future and current success. And so with that, Commissioner Johnson.
Briefly, Commissioner, we've got a question from Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't need it right now, but maybe you can just get back to us, because as these CARES Act funds come in, I'd be particularly curious how many people are going through these programs and what sort of waiting lists there are, and if we were to appropriate more money for particular programs, what sort of return would we be getting? How many more Alaskans would we be getting trained? So that's sort of where my, my head is at, and I don't need it right now, but maybe if you could provide us that information, I think it'd be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, did you hear the question?
Yes, sir, I did, and we will follow up.
Okay, and the last thing I want to say before we transition to Commissioner Johnson is, are you three, the university president, yourself, and Commissioner Johnson, I'm going to ask them all the same question, you're first, are you all continuing to meet monthly, quarterly, over the CTE plan, and et cetera, and joined at the hips still going forward? Have you been, and are you?
Mr. Co-Chair, yes, sir, we are meeting. In fact, I was in Commissioner Johnson's office yesterday. And so we will continue the conversation, we will continue to meet, and we are tied at the hip, yes.
Thank you. And one last question. Do you currently have any job fairs going on in Anchorage right now? I was under the impression, I heard a rumor that there might be new jobs being offered in Anchorage in the, I think, in the air freight business. Has that came through your office? Have they reached out to you for help on recruiting?
Mr. Co-Chair, that would go through Business Connection, and I am certain that they are on top of it. And we will gear up our hiring events and job fairs across the state, many of which will be virtual, but we are doing work in that area.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I just want to put my questions on the record. So just in regards to the federal COVID funding with the $91,000 and then the $665,000, what's the department's plan to do with this money for AvTech? What changes might you do? What enhancements? Would you provide tuition assistance, scholarships, and, you know, expand your programs, increase outreach, et cetera, just things of that nature? I'm just curious, you know, when you have 65, you know, a little $750,000, what would you do with that money, or what do you plan to do with that money? Thank you.
And lastly, with that question, just in when you that response, also just for AvTech, list the different funding agencies for student grants. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bishop. For the record, my name is Michael Johnson, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thank you for the opportunity to participate in today's hearing. I'm joined by our program experts today, Ms. Deb Brittle and Mr. Brad Billings, who will introduce themselves for the record in just a few moments. And as you stated, my apologies for having to leave the hearing early, but Ms. Riddle and Mr. Billings will be here. I will be happy to meet with individual members of the committee or answer questions in writing that I may miss after I have to leave at 9:45 this morning. And again, thank you for having a presentation on this topic. Next slide. We're going to begin sharing about opportunities presented by the COVID relief money by highlighting the foundation upon which we will build those opportunities, which is really based on what you just heard, the 2010 state CTE plan, the 2018 addendum to that plan, and the State Board of Education's Alaska Education Challenge. Today's topic, CTE, is a priority for the State Board of Education, as indicated in the Alaska Education Challenge. Priority number two is increase career, technical, and culturally relevant education to meet student and workforce needs. That priority correlates with the state's CTE plan, specifically strategy number one of that plan, which calls for systemic cooperation. And as you noted, I do meet with my counterparts. Both have been in my office within the last couple of weeks, and I appreciate both of them and their willingness to partner with us for K-12 students. Alaska students who take more, we know, take two or more credits of CTE in high school including at least one credit of content-specific CTE, progressive graduate at 20% higher graduation rates. So our graduation rate in the state is right around 79-80%. We can take that up to the 90s, almost 100%, by increasing our CTE opportunities. There's also ample evidence that classroom instruction that is aligned with students' culture increases the likelihood of success. Finding ways to engage students with CTE STEM learning courses that incorporate the local culture and industry is critical in making learning more relevant for students, teachers, and community. An example of this is the fantastic work that Cook Inlet Tribal Council is doing with Fab Labs and digital badging, which is a new way to provide and encourage incremental opportunities to increase skills for students that may not otherwise have access. ANSEP is another great program that's growing and expanding their program for more students. Beginning on the next slide, Operations Manager Ms. Riddle was going to provide some CTE context for the committee. If we get through in time, I'll jump back in on a slide with some other COVID relief money. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Riddle.
Dr. Johnson, Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to point out, you said today we're at 79 or 80% graduation rates with the advent of CTE back into our schools. I just want, for those home that's listening, when I came here in 2006, our graduation rate as a state was 63%. And this is just proves that CTE works and it increases graduation rates. Thank you. Next slide.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
We can.
Hi, thank you. For the record, my name is Deborah Riddle, and I am the Division Operations Manager for the Department of Education. What I wanted to do on this slide is to frame a little bit of how we structure our CTE program at the department. Our primary funding source is Carl D. Perkins funds. This is not the only funding source that districts receive, and even though it's a kind of a small amount of money we'll talk about later, through partnerships with the Department of Labor and with the department or with the University of Alaska system, we're able to really maximize and spread that out so that the programs are really strong. One of the pieces that we have to do is create a state plan, and this is a requirement of the Strengthening Career and Technical Education for the 21st Century Act, which we call Perkins 5, which was signed into law in July of 2018. We had 2 years of a transition. Our final plan was approved on July 1 of 2020 by the U.S. Department of Education, or the Department of the Office of Career and Technical and Adult Education, which we call OCTE. One of the things that the plan does is that it outlines the requirements for a really strong CTE plan, which really strongly mirrors what's in the Alaska CTE plan. And that is, one of the main things is implementing programs of study. And Brad, Mr. Billings will talk about that in a later slide. There's also a strong emphasis on special populations and equity, making sure that all students receive quality CTE programming throughout their career, starting as early as elementary school up through high school, as well as preparing teachers and faculty. We offer several programs for professional development. We have a competitive grant that is offered, and AVTEC receives one of those currently. We also have some trainings that happen that include both CTE directors in each of the districts. We invite partners from a lot of the TVET partners are invited, and they sit shoulder to shoulder with our teachers and our CTE folks. And then the plan also has, and this is new to Perkins 5, a really strong work-based learning focus, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. And those components of that state plan that we have to we had to provide, and we provide data on each year, is kind of the cornerstone for what most CTE programs are built upon. Because the funding source is not very large, it's the Perkins has set the foundation for how the other programs within the districts are used. You know, for instance, Anchorage is a big district. They receive Perkins funds. They have their system set up. Their non-Perkins funded courses follow pretty much in the same manner. So it has built a really strong infrastructure within the CTE programming. On the slide, there are two links. The first one that says Perkins 5 in Alaska, that is the website or the webpage you can go to look at that talks specifically about the plan development and provides a list of stakeholders who were involved in that state plan. The second link is the Alaska CTE Perkins plan. That is a copy of the actual document that was submitted to OCTE and then approved. Any questions on that slide?
None. Thank you.
Next slide. Next slide, please. Pass it on to Brad Billings.
Perfect. This is Brad Billings, the Administrator for Career and Technical Education at the Department of Education. So just now to dig a little more deeply into the kind of the unit of organization that school districts are building to achieve these goals, and this is the Program of Study, a CTEPS for short. I just wanted to talk briefly about six features of the CTEPS that Perkins Law requires, but honestly, it's common sense and success practices that are integrated by school districts. The purpose of these CTEPS is to move students beyond the classroom so that they're walking from the classroom, they're graduating with a head start, with a credential, with a credit, with an access to the high skill, high wage positions that Commissioner Ledbetter mentioned. So the first feature then of these programs of study is this responsiveness to demand. Each school district, when they build a program of study, they have an advisory committee that's made up of not only school staff, parents, sometimes students, and then also industry and community representative. This advisory committee, and as they're building the CTEPS, these programs of study, are looking also at economic employment demand. So what are the industries that are popping, if you will, and how should we be responding and preparing our kids for those? The second feature is this student career development, and this often extends down into the middle school or even elementary school where students are exploring career options. They're thinking about the world of work and they're researching those things. And then as they progress to the secondary level, then they're moving out into kind of more job-based experience of work. The third area is this multiple stack courses idea. And Commissioner Ledbetter mentioned that these aren't just standalone courses. Well, one of my favorite classes in middle school was a woodshop class. Honestly, at the time, though, I walked away with my grade and I didn't feel like it connected me to anything. I think that the connections, the collaboration has matured a lot since I was in middle school. So these multiple stack courses, starting with the career research, moving through basic employability skills, getting to more technical skills that may be job focused, so something specific to construction or specific to, you know, process technology or the healthcare field. We're moving students through courses that are connected. The fourth element is the academic employability and technical standards. Academic standards are the reading, writing, math, science that we have embedded in our K-12 system. The employability skills or standards are talking about what is required when students are in the workplace. And then, of course, the technical standards, which come from industry and employers. So moving students through those three different sets of standards. The fifth element of a quality and effective CTEPS then is that students are earning or getting a head start on pathways toward credentials and credits. So, you know, it could be a credential from a driver's license to a, you know, a welding certificate. It could be dual credit where we're partnering with the university to say, hey, a student is earning credit both for graduation and something that can be applied after they graduate and give them a head start. So those post-secondary benefits that students are graduating with. And then finally, the sixth feature is this work-based learning, the pushing students beyond the classroom. First of all, studying about work, studying through work, and then studying at work. So moving high school students out beyond the classroom. This is the structure that we fund, that Perkins requires. It's what school districts are building. A small district may have one program of study. A larger district like in Anchorage or Fairmont may have up to 20, just kind of as an example, programs of study. And then this is also the structure that students are engaged with. It's nice for hanging these others effective practices of job skill development and moving them toward those high skill, high wage jobs. So I'll pass it back to Deb for that next slide.
Hi, hi. Once again, this is Deb Riddle with the Department of Education and Early Development. We're going to talk a little bit about the state efforts in CTE, and what I'm going to talk about on this slide really talks about the partnerships that Commissioner Ledbetter was talking about earlier. The Alaska Education Challenge was built on partnerships. This was across the state. People from all different backgrounds came together and came up with this priority. How we've taken that forward is we partnered with several different entities within the state in order to build upon this. So one of the things that we did most recently last year, May of 2020, we released the Alaska Work-Based Learning Guide. And so what we did is the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, the Department of Commerce, and we had educators and we had some industry partners came together to look at how to start maybe looking at work-based learning. One of the concerns was the risk. And so we spent a considerable amount of time visiting with the Wage and Hour, which is part of the Department of Labor, coming up with some guidelines for parents, for educators, for students, for the employers, looking at things like workman's compensation, what trades can students do at what age, and then even as what age do they need or when are they going to need a work permit, and so this. So it ranges from, the different types of work-based learning opportunities that we really focused on, ranged from work release and getting credit for that, all the way up through, an intern, an unpaid intern, a paid intern, up through pre-apprenticeships. And so this document is more, it really helps outline and maybe provide some guidelines for districts and employers to start the conversations about starting some work-based learning. Some other work that we do, we collaborate quite a bit with, of course, with our districts. We meet with them quite often, but we do have two annual statewide CTE conferences that we kind of co-host one and then we host the other. And what we do is we try to pull stakeholders, our TVA partners, come to these trainings and sit with our CTE directors in order to help build some programming and get some articulation agreements. So how do they start in grade 9 or grade 8 and move all the way up into a post-secondary program with certificates earned along the way? We also have monthly collaboration calls with university. We work very closely with the University of Alaska Transition Coalition, and we have created and made great strides in helping students earn dual credit. So this partnership has been very successful, and we have set some guidelines and really helped some districts provide those dual credit opportunities for their students, so that when they get to the post-secondary, and it isn't necessarily just college credit, it can be technical credit as well for some of those training institutions. And once again, we are active partners with some of our TVET-funded recipients. We really rely on them to help us provide some of those pathways to to their organizations as well as organizations, other organizations within the state. Are there any questions on that?
No, I'd just like to, thank you. I'd just like to make a comment. It's encouraging and very good news to see those monthly collaborative calls going, you know, so the right hand knows what the left hand's doing every month. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I'll pass it on to Mr. Brad. Please.
So the next slide that talks about current CTE funding, this is the annual funding that, school districts are receiving for CTE-related activities. The first is the Perkins, the Carl Perkins funds that Deb Riddle has already mentioned. Annually, the state receives $5.1 million. 85% of that money is immediately passed on through a formula to participating school districts. We currently have about 42 or 43 of our 54 school districts that are taking those funds. We have a minimum amount of $15,000 that are given to some of the smaller districts that maybe don't have the student volume, but that's a minimum we set as $15,000. So $5.1 million for those federal Perkins funds. The second amount, about $17.6 million, this is embedded within the student funding formula. There's a 1.5% factor that adds funds for districts to use toward CTE activities. And I would just make a note that, you know, especially in our larger districts, you know, for example, to run the King Career Tech Center, the school district is putting in much more of their funding formula dollars to pay for CTE-related activities in some cases. So, again, these are the available funds annually on a routine basis. I would just note, and again, thinking back to the elements of a program of study, Perkins funds are not designed to deliver all of your CTE needs. They're designed to set a framework that then is linking you to other resources. So beyond the $5.1 million and the $17.6 million, then we're linking, and it has to be this way, then we're linking to the resources that Commissioner Ledbetter has and the adult training activities that the Department of Labor does so well. So we're linking to those. We're linking to the University of Alaska, their workforce development system. So those are government organizations. And then an even more important partner is the private training that employers are doing all the time. And who knows what kind of resources are being put into that. So the point of Perkins funds is to push students beyond the classroom and give them tangible benefits to access those Department of Labor adult training opportunities and the University of Alaska system and high-skill, high-wage jobs. That's the goal that we're shooting for.
Mr. Billings, Senator Von Imhoff has a question, sir.
Thank you. Actually, what I did is I see in slide 20, it's more appropriate for my question, so I'm going to wait to the next slide.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Billings, I'm not familiar with the Carl Perkins funding. What are they? Where does it come from, and what are the restrictions to it?
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, through the chair. Carl Perkins is a federal law. It's been in place for many decades. It's passing money to states for career and technical education programs in the secondary setting. This $5.1 million, it's remained the same, honestly, for about, I think, three decades, and just recently it's starting to increase again. So I think we may be receiving $5.2 million next year. It's required, as I mentioned, that 85% of that money is passed on to districts and a handful of post-secondary partners. Then with the remaining 15%, we're also awarding grants to, for example, the professional development of CTE teachers in our schools, so training opportunities. We're focused on, as Deb mentioned, equity. One of the big areas of focus for the Perkins money recently is about equity. So special populations, making sure that everyone has access to CTE opportunities. The Perkins funding is based on a district having that program of study that I mentioned. So it's not just a Woods course here, and then I get to go dabble and, you know, try out home economics. It's not just dabbling. It's a program of study with those elements, work-based learning, the aligned curricula, progressive courses, so that we're linking students to the other opportunities.
Thank you. Next, any more questions? Next slide.
Hi, once again, this is Deb Riddle, Department of Education and Early Development. The next slide talks about the COVID relief funding that the department has received on behalf of districts. So for the fiscal years of FY20 through FY24, districts have received $504.9 million, and this is a combination of the CARES Act, the CRISA Act, and the ARP Acts. And so how this money can be spent in relation to CTE, there are 15 allowable uses of these funds. And the first allowable use is to fund any type of CTE activities that are already in place that follow the Carl D. Perkins programs. There are also different ways that the money can be spent that is in addition to that. And so we made there's a list here. After school and summer programs is a strong focus of the ARP Act funding, and so that is one way that districts can spend the money. They can address some facility, internet, infrastructure issues. They can support the career and technical student organizations, which are the CTSOs, which provides leadership activities for students. Professional development and, you know, helping districts get more instructors through a Type M certification. And then once again, trying to really look at those different ways of getting CTE instruction to students with the COVID challenges that are involved, because most classes, or a lot of classes in CTE, require hands-on. So how can districts provide some really quality programs using different modes of instruction? Attached is also it's a document called the High Quality CTE During COVID-19 Challenges Innovations Document. It's a lengthy and it's dense, but it has provided a lot of ideas and opportunities for districts to take advantage of, for the state to look at and see which opportunities we want to take advantage of, and you know, moving forward with these funds. It is a significant amount of funds. And where the department has several teams working together to help districts through all the different programs on how to utilize these funds for their programs. Are there any questions on this slide?
Thank you.
Senator Von Miller.
Yes, so one of the things is continue to expand virtual CTE coursework by developing partnerships. So a couple comments, or questions, actually, questions and comments. You have virtual, which I'll talk about in a second, but isn't there a relationship right now with the Lower Yukon School District that is sending students to Anchorage School District to attend King Career Technical School? Is that what's happening right now?
That's a program that's available. I'm not sure if they're sending them over. I can find out because of the COVID restrictions.
Brad, did you want to take a shot at that? I saw you nodding your head.
Yes, Brad Billings for the record. So this model of a short-term residential program, like, this is something that's developed and evolved in Alaska. And I was just on a national call yesterday, and we were being asked about it. This is the NACTEC. This is the Excel Alaska. This is what we're doing, and this is something that Lower Yukon has said is, we're going to establish a place where our students can stay overnight for multiple days in Anchorage, and then they partnered with the Anchorage School District to take advantage of the quality program at the King Career Tech Center, as mentioned.
Thank you. Senator, follow-up?
Yes, thank you. So I realize that, you know, we have before COVID and during COVID and after COVID, so going from in-person to virtual, hopefully back to in-person, are you seeing that there are successes? Is this something that Lower Yukon is wanting to resume again this fall. Are there other districts looking at this? Is there other programs beyond Anchorage? Are there some of the larger communities, Fairbanks, Utqiagvik, Bethel, Kotzebue, Nome, are they also looking at the residential programs?
Through the chair, Senator Imhoff, von Imhoff. Yes, I think this is, there's two directions to go with this. Yes, first of all, districts are expanding this. We have a collaboration in the Bristol Bay region that has multiple districts building this kind of a model. So yes, this short-term residential program model is expanding and being built out. In another direction, yes, career tech courses, I think their strength is that they are often hands-on and engaging for students. Obviously, we have rural geographic challenges here in Alaska, and one of the things that COVID has forced us to do is accelerate how we're distributing and sharing expertise and resources around the state. So, for example, NACTEC, I'll give a shout out to them. They have a small engines course that they're working to create modules and to share it across districts. So it's not just something in Nome, but it's something that they're sharing and providing expertise. Anchorage School District has provided two CTE courses via Canvas, an online learning system. And what they're doing is inviting students across the state to join their expert teacher and their quality curriculum. So yes, we're trying to maintain and hang on to those hands-on, that hands-on learning, but also we're taking advantage of where we've been pushed and accelerated to deliver our expertise and share resources virtually.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Please continue.
Okay, the next slide, which is the federal COVID relief continued slide. So even though this is not an exhaustive list, today's presentation has several types of programs that we're able to support. Last week, Secretary of Education Cardona indicated that to the state chiefs they'll be receiving some additional guidance regarding the ARP funds. By the end of April, we've been waiting for some information as to how this is going to work, and so that should be coming by April. He also indicated that we might receive some more additional information regarding the maintenance of effort requirements for these funds as well before next week, which will be really helpful for the state as well as for the districts. We have also been working with districts to identify some remaining gaps after they have after they work through the public process of allocating their funds, you know. So where are the gaps falling with these funds? The DEED staff are attending meetings with other states to identify the best practices for supporting and expanding CTE opportunities during and after COVID. For example, the Association of Career and Technical Education has published a document regarding the challenges, which is posted on the previous slide. One of the findings is that the need for professional development to support teachers as they provide new delivery models for CTE. We're looking forward to working with partners like CERC to get Alaska-specific staff developed for these CTE opportunities. Already, we've been working for almost a year with the state's teachers association to implement and build upon work from the CTE professionals with Canvas as our online learning system. And this will provide a place for teaching and learning, whether remote or in person, as well as a hub for some professional development. We already have quite a few resources on that learning management system that have been really helpful for teachers and districts. For example, a host of CTE classes focused on IT, such as coding and networking and broadcast engineering, have been populated by teachers on the Canvas platform. So already we have, you know, some really kind of top-notch courses coming along with that. So the innovation and technology has helped the CTE teachers and enabled them to lead the way in adapting to digital curriculum development. Tribal organizations, as have been mentioned before, the Aleut community of St. Paul Island, the tribal government is utilizing grant funds to develop digital curriculum specific to the Canvas platform to support public education in the communities. And finally, just to remember that this money is available for multiple years. We want to be a steward of these funds in a manner that extends the benefits and allows us to learn how all of the other monies and districts are receiving is working together so that we can help coordinate it. And so just as a last note, if there are any questions or the commissioner would like to convey that if there are any questions you would like him to answer specifically or any meetings, to please reach out and let us know.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members? Thank you. All right. Very well done. Next up, we'll go to our last presenter. President Pitney, University of Alaska. Good morning.
Good morning. And joining me is Terry Cothran, who works, I would say, daily with both Department of Education and Department of Labor and Workforce Development, as well as throughout our campuses, and has really been instrumental in partnerships with Avtech at the recent success on the Maritime Center of Excellence and what we've been doing in the fisheries arena. But I'm going to let Terry talk about some of the background on CTC, and then I'm going to spend my time talking about kind of COVID and potential ideas. I really feel like we're in the ideas phase of how can we get the state's economy back on track. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Terry and let her talk specifically about our partnerships and then go from there. Thanks.
Thank you, President Pitney. Terry, good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Terry Cothran, Associate Vice President of Workforce Development for the University of Alaska. I want to thank co-chairs Bishop and Stedman and members of the committee for the opportunity to talk with you about how the University of Alaska supports career and technical education, and add to what has already been shared on how our partnerships with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and Department of Education and Early Development strengthens the delivery of CTE across the state. Before I share three key ways the university supports CTE, and I'm on slide 23, I want to clarify how we define CTE across the system. While the majority of our programs could be considered in a broader sense as contributing to workforce development, we traditionally think of CTE as our non-credit, industry-recognized certifications, occupational endorsements, certificates, and associate degrees. The majority of these programs are highly technical and short-term that provide specific skills needed to enter the workforce. There are three primary ways the university supports CTE. One, we work with industry, secondary, state, and federal agency partners to provide pathways into post-secondary. For example, dual enrollment provides a pathway between secondary and post-secondary and accelerates college and career readiness for high school students. Nearly 2,200 high school students participated in our dual enrollment programs in FY20. Some examples include our very successful middle college model that provides secondary students the opportunity to obtain an associate's degree by the time they graduate high school. Our middle colleges are delivered in partnership with the Anchorage, Matsu, and Fairbanks school districts, and has recently been expanded online through Alaska Advantage that now has partnership agreements across the state. Many dual enrollment students also take advantage of being able to take CTE courses in programs such as process technology, welding, CNA, and construction, to name a few. We also provide adult pathways that accelerate the time to degree completion by providing credit for prior learning to apprentices and military members. During last week's hearing on SB 10, I shared with you the employment outcomes of nearly 18,000 graduates over a 10-year period from programs that are contributing to the high demand and regional workforce needs across the state. Specific to CTE programs, and going back even further, between 1999 to 2018, 28,503 graduates obtained certificates or associate degrees. Growing a strong workforce is at the core of the university's mission, and delivering programs that are aligned to state and regional workforce needs will continue to be one of the primary ways we support CTE. The third way we support CTE is by providing continuing education and professional development. A couple of examples include MSHA, or Mine Safety and Health Administration, compliance training that is required annually for all miners to be on a mine site. We also offer professional development courses that support career advancement, such as the Alaska Seafood Processors Leadership Institute that trains future leaders in the seafood industry. Next slide, please. Funding is a critical component to delivering CTE programs, especially since they typically need more lab space and equipment that requires ongoing investment to train students on the most current technology. Our community campuses and technical colleges are the entry points for many of our students across the system. In FY20, their programs generated close to $30 million in tuition. We also invest over $38 million in unrestricted general funds to support access to post-secondary education and CTE programs through our community campuses. There are two state grants that Departments of Labor and Education have already touched on. We are fortunate to have access to these grant programs that are dedicated to CTE. The university is listed in statute as one of 10 TVEP recipients, and we received nearly $5.8 million in FY21 that has been allocated to support CTE programs across the university system and state. HB 100 to reauthorize TVEP for 3 years is currently being considered by the House Finance Committee and is an important source of funding to support CTE in the future at the university, AvTech, and regional training centers. Each year, the university also has the opportunity to apply for a STEP grant through the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And in FY21, we were awarded nearly $300,000 that is supporting construction, maritime, and mine training. Deed shared the value that the Perkins Federal Grant Program adds in supporting CTE. As a university, we appreciate the opportunity to apply for Perkins grants, and the current awards are funding CTE pathways in construction, health, maritime, and teacher education. We also partner, as Deed mentioned, with school districts across the state to develop and expand dual enrollment pathways between secondary and post-secondary. Perkins helps fund some of those CTE dual enrollment opportunities. Slide 25, please. Speaking of partnerships, while we have been partnering with both departments prior to 2009, our partnerships were strengthened, as Commissioner Ledbetter shared, by coming together to publish the Alaska CTE plan and collaborate through the years on its implementation. These examples here represent how we partner to strengthen CTE opportunities for Alaskans, and I'll just highlight a few. With Deed, as they shared, we meet monthly to partner on various CTE initiatives. Some of the outcomes include the development of resources to enhance the delivery of dual enrollment and to educate students and parents on the benefits of dual enrollment to encourage participation. University representatives have served on multiple Perkins advisory committees, most recently when Deed developed their Perkins 5 state plan. And we partner annually, as they mentioned, on their conferences and to meet the required Perkins reporting for post-secondary. With the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, we are currently partnering to expand the related technical instruction options for healthcare apprenticeships. They work with us regularly to maintain as many university programs as possible on their list of eligible programs that provide students access to federal WIOA funding to support their education. We partner throughout the year with Research and Analysis, a section of the Department of Labor, to meet reporting requirements for programs such as TVEP and to report employment outcomes of our graduates. And while AvTech and university programs have been partnering for years to articulate credit for students to have a pathway to continue their education, as President Pitney mentioned, we most recently have strengthened our partnership by joining together to address the workforce development needs of the maritime industry through the Alaska Maritime Education Consortium. We published a five-year action agenda in 2020 that we are now partnering to implement, and a resolution was passed by the Alaska Workforce Investment Board in support of the action agenda and our consortium. And as a consortium, we have applied through the Department of Transportation, Marine Administration, for a designation as a domestic maritime center of excellence that we hope to be successfully awarded this summer. While there are more partnership examples I could elaborate on, I'll turn it back over to President Pitney to share some additional funding opportunities and impacts related to CTE.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
Okay. For the record, Pat Pitney, Interim President, University of Alaska. I am on the next slide, the COVID-19 support and impacts. One of the questions was what support have you gotten from the federal government thus far? And to date, directly from the federal government, there's been, well, not directly, but in total, we've had $77 million of COVID support. Of that money, $23 million is directed as pass-through to students for impacted for students who have been enrolled and impacted during this time frame. $56 million has been in institutional aid, and that is a combination of funding that came direct to the institutions, and federally that was based on enrollment and primarily and heavily impacted on our number of Pell Grant recipients. And then we also received some money through Department of Health and Social Services on the public health needs of the university. And we did receive some funding from different communities, a small amount, but impactful for the campuses in those communities. The each different funding source came with different restrictions, the biggest one being that amount that needed to go directly to students. We calculate that we're about $20 million short of our impact of COVID. Areas of impact were increased expenses for things like in our classrooms, especially in the CTE area, where, you know, welding you just can't do online. But in order to accommodate social distancing, we reduced our class sizes significantly. In our health arena, like dental hygiene and dental assisting, we put up, you know, we reduced class sizes, but we also put up personal protection equipment between stations, also in our fisheries lab. So there were those costs. And then there was the impact on lost revenue. And that's from the Delta Mine Training Center to the museum to our loss in tuition. And then in our dorms and our food service, although we were able to reduce some costs, the loss in revenue left a much more dramatic gap. And so we were running about 25% capacity in our dorms, and again, we were able to reduce some costs, but not costs that made up for the huge loss in revenue. So as I said, we're still about $20 million short. Our early Our early estimate was about $15 million short and refined at $20 million. So in terms of kind of dollars to date, we're trying to get back stable. And as you know, this COVID impact was on top of a $25 million state reduction this year, so a significant double whammy in trying to reduce and fit into our new funding constraints. So I'll stop there, and if there's any questions on our COVID support to date, and then I'll go on with discussion of some ideas that we have shared for thinking through the state's economic recovery post-COVID.
Senator Von Imhoff, did you have a question? Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Could you maybe have them touch on the maintenance of effort and remind us again that process and the potential impact of budget reductions the last couple of years and what those numerics are expected to show in a few days?
So the and I'm going to speak in broad ballpark terms. The because of the compact reductions and because of the rules on maintenance of effort, there are current estimates out there that the reductions to the university will put K-12 funding at risk. So it's actually the K-12 portion of the funding that's at risk because the university's funding was cut. There is, in the First CARES Act, the administration submitted a waiver request and was granted that waiver request. And to avoid meeting the maintenance of effort issues. And as I understand it, the administration will submit a maintenance of effort waiver. If that is not granted, I think upwards of about $150 million in K-12 funding is what is at risk.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pitney, the University Board of Directors has agreed to the compact for an additional reduction of $20 million. The other body is contemplating ignoring that compact and increasing the university's appropriation by $17 million. I'm wondering if you could address if that were to happen by the legislature and the $17 million and signed by the governor, how would those dollars be utilized by the university and by the board?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, thank you for that question. The board requested, as part of our legislative request, COVID mitigation. And as I mentioned on this slide, we estimate our original estimate was $15.7 million, which was the amount that the House has included, recognizing the essentially double whammy of COVID and the loss we've taken, both in lost revenue and increased expenditures. And really that COVID mitigation is to hold us so we can operate and just have to cut the $20 million that of state funding and not have to also cut and fit into the size of the reduced revenue as a result of COVID. So it is, it's just holding us so we can operate and move forward rather than having to cut both the $20 million plus another $20 million because of the COVID impact.
So let me get this clear. You anticipate additional revenue, and how much is that from COVID?
So we anticipate another $20 million impact in both revenue losses and cost increases that's over and above the direct subsidies we have received thus far. And so the Board of Regents had requested 15.7 for that COVID mitigation. My reading of the House's actions is they recognize the double whammy of this COVID impact. And I see that amount of money, not ignoring the compact, but recognizing the impact of COVID and kind of relieving the university from having to deal with COVID on top of the $20 million. Whether that stays as general fund or whether that becomes relief from part of the state's $1 billion COVID relief is, you know, I would anticipate that shifts over to federal through the budget process. But to me, what it does right now is just recognizes that we've got the double whammy of minus 20 general fund plus almost a minus 20 in COVID. And so that's in terms of just kind of holding our current operations. Additionally, we've been talking with people in the governor's administration about ideas for how do we get our post-COVID economy back on track. And if there's not any questions about the kind of the COVID impact, we can go to that next slide.
But Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hoffman,
if I might comment on the funding source, if we are able to address the university's double whammy through an appropriation of $15 million through COVID, that does not address the issue long-term because the COVID funds are at best available for two budget cycles, and then we are again faced with the potential reduction. So I wonder if the Board of Regents has taken that into consideration and embracing the position of the House of Representatives as a better solution for the long term.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we anticipate that if we can manage through this COVID and then through enrollment get back on a steady plane, that we can reach stability. Do I like that we have these reductions, and is it difficult? It is very difficult. But I do believe it's possible. We can be a better institution with more base general fund. But if we can get the relief of the impact of COVID, we will continue to manage to the new footprint. But I also think that there are huge opportunities for us to focus on how does the university serve the state and its economic recovery post-COVID.
Yep. Okay, next slide. Thank you.
So the next slide is just a recap of a presentation that we, our proposal that we sent forward, and it was very much focused on community and technical ed programs and students, and that through the $1 billion COVID funding, with a $70 million investment, that could provide training for 2,000 students, the tuition and fees associated with 2,000 students, plus a small amount of funding where we would have to address capacity gaps. The proposal was very much focused on those impacted by COVID, but this is, I believe, as a state and as a legislature, you're very much in the idea-generating phase. This was, how do we get back on track? The second component of that is, how do we do applied industry? How do we focus on some key priority areas of priority industry research partnerships? And Chad Hutchison, our state relations director, recently sent each member of the committee that proposal. And again, this is an initial idea. Other ideas based on most recently Senator Von Imhoff's discussion last week with Terry Cothran is there a way we could develop an endowment type model so we could have sustainability long term? Or could we upfront a program that provides for training capability in some of our, what we would call long-term sustainable programs, those programs that we know we're going to need workers, engineering, health, teachers. Is there a way for us to set up a program? We seed it with this federal money, within the rules of the federal money, but then figure out a way that fund then is sustainable in the long run, whether it be through industry partnerships, whether it be through, some mechanism, some return that fills that fund max, so that it isn't a once and done. And if you think about that infrastructure program that's coming up, a potential of 8 years. Well, this is a long-term prospect, and potentially. One thing we could do early is just provide some funds and get people excited about upskilling and giving them the capacity to upskill. And then, work to some of these more sustainable models. And so I wish I could come to you with just the lockstep. This is the absolute right way to go, but I'm in the idea phase, and I know you, all of you, are in the idea phase, and I'm just here to tell you that the university is interested in being a key component to our economic recovery, and we don't want to have to import workforce if there's a huge jobs opportunity coming out of this infrastructure bill. We want Alaskans to go to work.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Bishop. So, yes, President Pitney and I did have a follow-up conversation after my comments from last week, just in regards to financing opportunities for workforce development and career development well into the future. We had another senator present a bill the other day about providing scholarship and tuition assistance for, I think, 3 years for folks that have been affected by COVID. And my suggestion was think bigger and think longer, and let's provide tuition, some type of assistance for all sorts of people. Anybody who wants to improve or change or augment or what have you their career. And then if this infrastructure bill is going to come down the pike next fall, and it's going to be an 8-year infrastructure bill, which is kind of the rumors that we're hearing on the street from the federal government, then what about a program that's 8 years or even longer? Because new specialists and careers and workers will need to be brought on year after year. So if there is a way that we can start having the conversation to provide endowments at the university in Alaska, similar to endowments across the United States for other colleges, to provide assistance for tuition, for professor support, for chairs of departments and so forth, then we can have a sustainable model. And if COVID and ARP money can help us reach that goal to help leverage matching funds from the private sector, from industry, interested industries, then I say go for it.
Thank you. Other questions, comments from committee members? President Pitney, I'd just like to say while we are all waiting with bated breath on final guidance from Treasury, I would challenge you to be challenging me to see if any way we could find, if there's any way we could do a little endowment with some of these federal funds for some of these programs that we've been noodling about. So thank you. And we are going to wrap up today's meeting. I need to take an at ease. Brief at ease. Back on the record. Okay, this afternoon's meeting is canceled. We don't have a CS yet for HB 76. So tomorrow morning, we're going to bring SB 10 back up. And so that'll be on the 9 o'clock schedule tomorrow morning. And Senator Stedman.
Can you remind us what in the public what SB 10 is?
That's the, yeah, I could. That is the grants program for essential workers for the next 5 years. And so that's Senator Begich's bill, SB 10. So it's timely in discussion with what we've been talking about today. So, and if there's no further business to come before the committee, we are adjourned.